Turning now to agenda paper 5. We can do it in two ways. You can either approve everything that's listed on page 5 now, so we'll make up a bit of time, or we can have some more fun and invite Fabienne to introduce the comments that we received on classification of tonnage taxes.
So on income sector, well, classification of tonnage taxes, we received five kind of letters. Three which agreed, asking for some changes in the agenda decision and in the wording, and two that disagreed. And these were from the Danish Shipowners Association and UK Chamber of Shipping, so it's really in, well, the people that that are in this specific area. So we amended the tentative agenda, the wording of the tentative agenda decision to reflect some of the comments we had, and so that the effect agree with the staff recommendation to confirm its decision to not to add the issue to its agenda.
First question.
Then, do you agree with the wording? Do you have any other suggestions?
We made quite a number of changes to clarify, I think, based on the comments that came back. So it's different from what we'd originally published, but I don't think it changes really our sentiment too much. Anybody have any comments to make on the modified wording? Joe?
I actually think that it does, some of the changes do change the sentiments, and I think they are too direct. In particular, that taxes, the specific comment, like effectively what's happened is that a number of people have said tonnage taxes are varied, and we have widened it to say tonnage taxes are varied, and that's fair enough. But then we have been very specific and actually said taxes either on tonnage transported or tonnage capacity are based on gross rather than net amounts, which is a very definitive statement. And in particular, the next statement, taxes on a notional income derived from tonnage capacity are not based on the entity's actual taxable profit. Well, A, we've brought the word actual in, but I guess I would say, well, what is the relevance of that? And it is very specific. And then consequently, the IFIC noted that such taxes, and I'm not sure which such taxes, because we've widened it so much to include tonnage taxes, and even right in the very first paragraph, we actually say that some of those may very well be based on net amount, so I'm not sure what such taxes are. So I guess what I'm saying is I actually think we've widened the scope, but then actually been more definitive, and I actually think, therefore, and I'm not sure I agree with our definitiveness. So I think we have changed the sentiment of what we're saying.
So, in short, what suggestion would you give to the staff for clarifying?
Okay, what I would do, I think, is to... I think it is very important that we bring in the sentence that we had in the original... Sorry, and the taxable profit implies a notion of a net rather than gross amount. Okay, sorry, so that is there. I would effectively remove the last two sentences of the second paragraph. And actually then to remove the first sentence of the third paragraph and say, I'll come back to you.
Sorry, apologies, I might have been a bit slow off the mark after the banoffee pie, but I was I have to say, having read some of the comment letters, there are all sorts, there seems to be a wide variety of these taxes, and I was persuaded by some of the comment letters about you can elect on a ship-by-ship basis, you're in 1 year, out next year, whether we're just trying to be too prescriptive here in what is a fairly narrow set of circumstances. So I think I would personally be happy not to be prescriptive in the agenda decision, refer to IS 12 if maybe, and say it's a very narrow issue. I mean, why are we just talking about tonnage taxes? Because I think we're trying probably to sweep under the carpet or deal with in one agenda decision a wide variety of potential tax arrangements, and I was a bit reluctant to do that, I suppose.
Just to disagree, Andrew, I think what we're trying to do here was to keep this narrow. Otherwise, we're going to get into a discussion of, is any amount paid to a government a tax? And therefore, should it be accounted for in accordance with IS 12, which deals with income taxes? And I think the answer to that question, I would see, is that, well, all amounts paid to the government might be taxes, but they're not all taxes on income as defined in IS 12. So the question we're facing here is one of tonnage tax, which is an alternative to paying taxes on income that would be calculated in a way that would bring it within the ambit of IS 12. And we're trying to do two things. One is to remind people that for presentation purposes, whilst they can't call tonnage tax income tax, they can strike another subtotal down in the income statement, which is income before tonnage tax and income tax, to give a pre-tax number, and then income after taxes, which is after both of those taxes further down, to give the presentation that they're looking for, but to say that it's not an income tax, and therefore you don't have to look at all the requirements of IS 12 in calculating it. And to be perfectly honest, I don't know how you would apply IS 12 and some of the other arcane requirements of that standard, like deferred income taxes, to tonnage taxes. So I don't really want to go there. Okay? Sorry, can we just put that in the minutes? Ken was offered an opportunity to speak. Ruth?
He has been considered both. I think by adding some of these extra sentences, we may have confused readers as to what the principle is. And I think that the principle we were trying to get to is that even if tonnage tax is a substitute for income tax, even if it's called a substitute for income tax, or it's calculated based on a notional income tax, it isn't income tax because it's not based on taxable profits. I thought that was what we agreed last time. So when the people wrote in and they said, ah, oh, but it's calculated this way and that way, in all cases, in most of them that I saw, it was a substitute for income tax. And to me, that was the question that was being asked. If it is a substitute, because if we pay the tonnage tax, we don't pay the income tax, can we call it income tax? And I thought we agreed that our principle was, no, it isn't, because it's not based on income, not based on taxable profit. Yeah, and I think we've confused it by adding in all of these extra things, and I'd rather just go back and keep it really simple to say, even if it is a substitute for income tax, because it is not based on taxable profit, it is not income tax as defined. Disclose it how you like, but it's not income tax.
So it's not an income tax equivalent. You're
maybe there is something I'm not sure I understood because I wasn't there last time. But at the second paragraph, what we say, taxes either on tonnage transported or tonnage capacity are based on gross rather than net amount. I think that you may base a tonnage transported on the net amount if you calculate your rate by saying, I assume that when you transport 1 kilo or something, or 1 ton or something, the revenue is such and the expenses are such, and I multiply the tonnage by this net amount. This would sound like being something net. Just in detail, but...
That's why we specifically added the second last sentence to the first paragraph, because people pointed that out.
Okay.
It said basically that you take the tonnage and multiply it by something that's intended to produce some notional income number, And that's why we actually added the last sentence at the third to the second paragraph to say, but it ain't your income.
So when you say notional net income, you are referring to?
But I thought we had that from...
To respond, I did see the question the same way as Ruth thought. I think the question we were being asked, although it's about tonnage tax, was there are regimes out there where you can move from income tax to something else. And the answer we were giving was merely because you've moved from income tax, it doesn't mean that what you've moved to is income tax. It's got to be something which would meet the definition of income tax in its own right. And I wouldn't get anywhere into drafting, but I wonder whether we have got this too complicated, whether we should try and go back to that principle. Perhaps just saying, you know, tonnage tax is used as an example, but the question was, because it's a substitute for income tax, does that make it income tax? No, you'll have to assess it on the same criteria. And sometimes some things that there are substitutes to income tax will be, because there'll be some other form of income, and sometimes they won't be. And whether we can get a simpler structure to this by doing that.
So, just coming back to that principle, I actually thought that the principle that we were doing was actually based on the previous, if you like, IFRIC decision in relation to IAS 12 in terms of the scope. And it kept coming back to that the term taxable profit implies a notion of a net rather than a gross amount. And the key that I thought that we were focusing on in terms of our tentative decision was the fact that tonnage tax is based on a gross amount and not a net amount. And that was the key principle, not so much that it was actually a substitute for income tax, but that it was calculated on a gross amount and not a net amount. And therefore, to me, I have to say, when some of these submissions came in and talked about notional income, I started getting a little bit worried, because that does imply a net amount. So, that principle, I guess, is a question in terms of our different people's understanding from last time.
I mean, we've had the question of how far down from revenue do you need to go before you can strike something that says you're dealing with a net. Don't want to get into that. So that's out of it. The issue here really is that we'll be talking not about based on a tonnage, but deriving a notional income based on that tonnage, which sounds like a net amount. That actually isn't based on the entity's income and expense. And IAS 12 focuses on income and expense. It decides which part of that is not taxable, throws that out, which part of it is taxable but not in the current period, and calculates that separately. Calculating a notional income like this doesn't require any of that consideration. So it's not close to what IAS 12 is trying to deal with. So I think all we need to do is we've expanded the introductory paragraph, really, I think, to try and address all of these people who said, well, I'm not exactly in the same category that you told me you were going to reject before, so please, I want to be included. So it is a variety of different regimes, and here are some of the examples of it. But no matter which one you fit in, if it has any of these characteristics, closely, remotely, or otherwise, the thing is that calculating something based on a figure that is not the entity's own income and expense, giving rise to its net profit, net income, whatever we call it, but it's based on some other number, is not an income tax. I think that's what we want to focus on. I found that the language down here was getting a little bit too lengthy for my peace of mind and comfort, but to try and appease the people that really do want to pay income tax, I thought this might have helped them.
Can I make a suggestion? If we think that we've got it slightly too complicated, we could shorten it by taking out the proposed last sentence of the first paragraph and the proposed first sentence of the second paragraph. And that simply then focuses not on the ones that might actually be income taxes, but all the ones that we know aren't. And I would change the wording of the last sentence of the second paragraph to say taxes on a notional income derived, yada, yada, are not based on the entity's income and expenses, and just be done with it. So then the such refers only to the ones that we know that aren't.
I agree with the first remark of Joanna, because I think that the last part of the first paragraph is quite clear in indicating that there are several elements in jurisdiction, and especially the last one, I think, that is relevant, that is the tonal tax, is simply an advance payment of income taxes. That is a quite specific case that I think that is useful to include inside the agenda decision and just to include all the circumstances around.
But just to clarify, you're saying if the circumstance is that tonnage tax is used to determine the cash flow payment in advance of determining the income tax liability, that we should include that in here. But I wouldn't regard the payment, the advance payment of income tax, as being an expense. Presumably there is a calculation of income tax,
yes,
subject to IAS 12. So that's just a cash flow issue.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that may be creating a bit of ambiguity, because saying that it's simply an advance payment for income tax, that means that somewhere it should be considered like income tax. So I think that this part of the wording for addition might create ambiguity on what we finally want to say.
And the last sentence, or better, the last two sentences of the second paragraph, should be more focusing on the fact that AS 12 is linked with the aspect of income rather than other elements to be included inside. And so we should more be near the principle rather than to the other elements indicated in this.
I think what the staff was proposing was that, to cover all of it, so I get it right, in the first paragraph, the final sentence is deleted. In the second paragraph, the first sentence is deleted. The final sentence, that we change taxable profit to refer to income and expense, so based on an entity's actual income and expenses. And then the third paragraph takes that fact pattern and says, consequently, the IFRIC noted that the taxes would not be considered the income taxes in accordance with IAS 12. So it doesn't put it in the same paragraph, but I think it takes your point there.
But the last sentence of the first paragraph of paragraph 3, and will not be presented as part of the tax expenses in the statement of comprehensive income, should be probably modified in order to say will not be presented as a part of income tax expenses.
I think we're just using the defined term in IAS 1 that talks about tax expense. And tax expense includes current and deferred taxes on income, or income tax, I forgot which way around it.
It's defined as tax expense is the aggregate amount included in the determination of profit or loss of the period in respect of current tax and deferred tax. It's the defined term in IAS 12. So that the use of that term is an IAS 12 term. So if it's not something that's in IAS 12, which is the question in this case, we shouldn't be calling it tax expense.
I would like to avoid the confusion, because it was clear the example made by Bob before. You have a result before taxes, and you have a line item with that you call tonnage tax, and then you have a net result. I would like to be clear this concept inside. In order to
I think people should get to that anyway from just reading IAS 1, because that encourages the use of additional subtotals or information to clarify. it also has some required lines. One of the required lines is tax expense, which then is defined, as Trish reminded me, defined term in IS 12, and that is income taxes. So you'd have to present that separately anyway. If there are no income taxes payable, then it's obviously not a disclosure item. All right, so generally, subject to reviewing the final words, does anybody object to the staff proposal? All right. Fabienne, you've got, I think you've got your answer to the questions on that. We can go on to, you have the next one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Idle plants, there's nothing idle in here. Well, let me help summarize this. Seeing as it's only Ken that wants to comment, which, as he's reminded us before, he comments through the medium of the written submissions, and the staff takes those submissions into account, and they have taken them into account. So does anybody disagree with confirming the agenda decision? That's fine. For the benefit of the observers listening in, Joanna has now got up and left the table yet again. Not because it is 11 minutes past or 12 minutes past the hour. So we adjust the clock.
I think she should stand there and just keep moving it on.
What, to 6:30 very rapidly?
Perhaps that approach would mean that we can keep moving on as well. So if we can turn then to item 5C, intangible assets accounting for sales costs. And Dora, you're explicitly forbidden to mention that selling costs include catalogue costs from your discussion of this.
Well, the fact that Jim is not here probably won't get the reaction that we want. It's agenda paper 5C. All right, agenda paper 5C. Four commentators wrote in to suggest some changes to the proposed wording we published. They do share common themes as identified by the staff in paragraph 3 of agenda paper 5C. Paragraphs 5 through 7 of that paper provides the staff suggestions as to how to respond to those comments. Therefore, you would see that in the appendix A, proposed changes to the wording we published in the last update. You would also note that none of them suggest that we change our decision not to take this onto the agenda. So subject to the IFRIX agreement to what the staff proposed to the wording, we can finalize this decision today. So any comments?
In respect of sales commissions, I am still confused with what we're saying. I don't know what we've agreed. Can I capitalise sales commission or not on a development, on a property development? What are we saying in this conclusion? Because we're very specific saying we can't do advertising. And we're saying in some cases you might be able to capitalise seed. But in respect of sales commissions, I was still left thinking, what have we agreed on that?
I'm happy to respond to that. What we are saying in the wording right now is the accounting for them really varies, which is what we captured in the last paragraph. It varies depending on specific facts and circumstances. It's true if you treat them as inventory, they would not be able to be capitalized as inventory. But we have some other IFRS standards for direct incremental costs. So if sales commissions are direct incremental costs, some of those standards or specific narrow circumstances provide additional criteria that allow them to be capitalized. If you meet those additional criteria, then what we're saying is you could perhaps have an intangible asset in that case that gives you some future economic benefits that's recoverable and within your control. So that's what we are saying from the last meeting.
Ruth, are you saying that selling expenses are selling expenses and therefore they're always expenses?
Well, I'm not clear that the IFRIC agrees that you would capitalize sales commissions. Do people feel comfortable that that's what we would submit as a result of this?
I don't think that you're permitting it as a result of this. I think it's already in the standards. That's the whole point.
I'm certainly happy capitalizing Feng Shui costs, as I expect.
Especially pronounced Feng Shui, but never mind.
Well, just a couple of queries on the agenda, the wording of the agenda decision. In the first paragraph where we say revenue for the construction project will be recognised as sale of goods, is that an assumption of the particular fact pattern? Because if it's a statement of fact that always applies, I'm not quite sure why we would say will be, unless it's... Is that an assumption in the fact pattern that you're considering?
From the last meeting's paper, the submissions did assume that was where they concluded,
I think it might be possible to change the wording to make that a little clearer. And then the other comment I had was in the big paragraph in the middle where we talk about IS 11 and IS 18. You say IS 11 may include relevant guidance. So I wasn't quite sure why we needed to go on immediately after to talk about IS 38. Because if IS 11 provides the guidance, why do you need IS 38 in those circumstances?
For these circumstances, because when they apply IFRIC 15 guidance, they don't get into the construction contract scope. They actually are not in the scope of IS 11. So this is actually one instance of analogies that they could refer to.
Well, I understand the answer, but I don't know if we can make it clearer from the wording.
On the initial wording, in the last sentence of the second paragraph, it indicated that in those narrow circumstances, if additional requirements are met, capitalized costs may represent an identifiable intangible asset, blah, blah, blah. Why may represent?
I agree, may, could also be may not. I guess, is the IFRIC comfortable to remove may and just want to state that it is intangible asset once we capitalize that?
I think we need the may because some interpret it as not being an intangible asset, and I don't think we want to say one way or the other what the only answer is.
I've got some drafting type comments, but I'm happy just to pass those straight to Dawn.
All right, but in the light of the discussion so far, just go back, first of all, does anybody feel that we should take this onto the agenda, change our decision? No? So, confirming that we're going to go ahead and reject the item, so it's a question now of clarifying the language. The comments that have come back to us, do you think you can accommodate those in the write-up?
Did anybody see anything in the comments that we got that we hadn't done this? Trying to, because that's what the revisions in the second paragraph were attempting to, there were a number of comments that asked us to get more specific about exactly what analogies we were expecting people, or thinking people might draw. So that was the purpose of the addition in the second paragraph.
circulate the final wording to you. Otherwise, we're confirmed on that.
Thank you.
We'll keep you at the table just for a little while, Dora, just in case. We can turn to 5D now. My apologies, I forgot to mention before, there was a correction to the staff I wanted to make, but it's not a substantive correction. But four comments, four letters or commentators submitted, there were in fact only three. Two of them were the same, and he's not here today to vote one way or the other. So, Guido, thanks for sending in all those comment letters to us. In 5D, we only received one comment letter, which was very helpful, and we read it, so the staff took note of it.
Don't miss me when I've got you.
Ken, we'll
miss you like... No, don't worry.
We'll miss you like we miss a migraine. On the presumption that we only had one commentator, I'm hoping that you're not going to change your mind, that we don't take this onto the agenda. Staff has proposed no changes to the original wording. Does anybody object? Okay, confirmed. Thank you. Take on to 5B. Yes, I have to say, Ruth, this is something that concerned me greatly, that your firm is now writing in also to say that you agree. I thought those letters were going to stop. But thank you for your comments. Please continue if you really feel it's important.
It's going to take over from here.
It's just that we only write in to say that we agree when we really agree, not on every single one.
I think you made that absolutely clear. So now on to 5F. We received two conflicting letters here, one of which I like.
We received two letters that agreed with the Sanctuary letter and the decision that to take the issue to the agenda, subject to some changes. One relating to IS 39 and the inclusion of specific references, namely the AG paragraph, some of the AG paragraphs. And the second letter questioned the relevance of the reference paragraph 24 of IS 41. So what we propose actually is to stick to the general reference to IS 39 and not to go further in the reference to the more specific paragraphs of IS 39, because IS 41 stands on its own, so we think we don't need to give more reference about IS 39 within this agenda decision. And the second point on paragraph 24 of IS 41, we think it's relevant, and so we keep it, but we just emphasize the fact that it relates to the fact that day one gains shouldn't be normally recognized. So that's why we added the sentence in the agenda decision, saying that in these cases, the IFRIC noted that the discount rate selected would be expected to result in a value that approximates the cost. So do you agree with agree with the recommendation to confirm the sensitive decision not to add the issue to the IFRIC agenda first?
Right. Good agreement on that.
Yeah. And then, do you agree with the wording changes we propose on the IS 39 and paragraph 24, IS 41 reference?
Yep. Oh,
I'm totally confused now about the paragraph 24 reference, because you said it relates to day one gains. I can see... I cannot see that at all, and I don't know what adding the additional sentence actually does, because in these cases, the discount rate selected would be expected to result in a value that approximates that cost. What does that mean? That we pick a discount rate to make it the same? And I don't see where... No.
The whole point of this entire issue came to us because the submitter is paranoid that in his jurisdiction, somebody is going to, because there is no market, they're going to have to establish fair value by using estimated future cash flows, and the constituents are going to pick a discount rate that's going to result in day one gains. All we're trying to do is say paragraph 24 says that in these circumstances, fair value is likely to equal cost, and therefore you can't pick a discount rate that doesn't come up with that number.
But 24,
this is
talks about
belts and braces.
It doesn't tell me that I can't recognize day one gain. 24 is about biological transformation. When cost might equal fair value. What the hell's that got to do with day one gain?
If you've just planted the darn stuff and no biological transformation has taken place, then the fair value ought to be pretty much close to what it costs you to plant it. All that paragraph 24 says.
But I think the problem, and I raised it the last time, this whole standard is about day one gain. That's your journal entry. Your credit income. Your debit asset, your credit income. That's how the standard works. Is that what they don't want to do?
Not when nothing's happened.
Yes, I know, but they don't seem to want to do it at all.
No, that's not the point. The point is day one gains on the day when you first create the biological asset. And they're talking about planting. So you paid somebody to plant something, and the seeds cost you something, and all you've done is put them in the ground, and nothing has happened yet. They haven't even germinated. And people are, and they're concerned about estimated future cash flows, discount rates, that where you, what you've got is debit asset credit cash, not debit asset credit income as the result of biological transformation. That's the issue.
Do they understand that on day two they'll credit income as the thing grows? Do they realize that? I guess that is what worried me about it in the first place, is I was worried that they thought that they didn't understand that that was the way the standard works.
Day one gain, I think. Day one gain is one big part of it, but it's upfronting the profit by having a optimistic by having a discount rate that make it really easy to get profit. At the beginning of the life of an asset that would be harvested maybe in 40 years. No, it doesn't have front. I understand, yeah. But it's a question of knowing how much. And
In answer to the question, we're not taking it onto the agenda.
In fact, on day one, you've got your cost of planting, right? This is an expense. You've got an asset. What they don't want is that the cost is 10 and the asset, by miracle, is already 100. Because the thing is there, very small, in the ground, and nobody can do anything with it.
Which we would hope people would have come to that conclusion anyway. What Trisha suggested is adding in an additional sentence. An additional sentence which just helps to re-emphasize that. Perhaps unnecessary in some people's minds, but not in the submitter's mind. But the standard IS 41 will require the recognition of gains or income at different types. If you've just acquired an animal and it gives birth to this progeny, then surprise, surprise, you've got some income that comes from that.
I still think that added sentence is wrong. We're not going to select a discount rate because we're not going to do a fair value. What 24 is saying is that cost, at the beginning of a period, cost will approximate fair value. Therefore, use cost. It does not say derive a discount rate that gives you the same market value. I just think that sentence, added sentence, is wrong and misleading. It implies you've got to do a market value.
I don't really have much longer discussion because you're not taking it onto the agenda. There's not much concern around this table with the standard as it exists at the moment. We're trying to clarify this petition. But it's not just day one, it's day two, day three, as it moves away from the initial acquisition or the initial planting of the crop. And at some point they say, we now move away from cost and we're into discounted future cash flows. What's the discount rate we use? Oh, it's a discount rate that now gives us a day five profit, a large profit, as opposed to the type of profit that you think you would have earned based on the uncertainties that are inherent in this type of industry. If you think that additional sentence isn't helpful or if it's misleading, then we can take it out. Anybody object to leaving the sentence in? Two, well, that's not quite a majority, but I think the rest, to use my colleague's term, it's a race between indifference, apathy, and total ignorance.
Part of the reason why we included it is because that if you read the first paragraph, you realize that there's a question that was asked.
Would it be helpful for that sentence that rather than saying that the discount rate selected, saying if a discount rate was used, it would be expected to? So you're not implying that you are doing it, but just that if you did, then you would get that. And so that's Joe's point, saying you use cost. But if you did it, you know, a check, as I often do, you'd get down there. But you're not saying you have selected, but if you...
I think we're into editorial now, mm-hmm. So take this offline. We'll circulate the agenda decision for your final review and editing comments. Thank you, Fabienne. Now, the moment we've all been waiting for, paper 5G, historic occasion.